let's jump in. Matthew 12:20 says, "A bruised reed shall he not break, and a smoking flax shall he not quench, till he send forth judgment into victory." It happens to all of us at some time or other in our life, and we can't really avoid it. It always comes from the outside. Rejection comes in a multitude of forms, whether it's career-related or a college application or maybe denial of a loan or a credit card that you applied for, or relationships, or being turned away when you promote some kind of product or you're trying to sell something, whatever that is, we deal with rejection. And today, I'm just going to focus on one of these aspects. We're going to talk about relationships. We tell ourselves lies about being unwanted and unloved, and we start to go down this rabbit hole. But today, I'm here to offer you hope. I don't want to just talk about the bad stuff. We're going somewhere with this. And maybe it's not for everybody, but I know it's for somebody. So if it's you, please tune in and listen closely today, because God has a word for you. There's a strange, wild grief that comes with rejection. And if you've been there, you know that abandonment and that betrayal hit hard and fast and without warning. One moment, one day, you're in a relationship with a spouse or a significant other, or there's that close friendship with someone, or it's even your sibling or your parent or even your adult child who decides to cut you off. And the next moment, the door is locked, the blind rolls down with a click, and it's padlocked, and you're no longer allowed in, and there's a closed sign in the window, and they ignore your calls. And it's bewildering, and it comes, that blow is just so unexpected, out of nowhere. Ghosted, such a great term. Blocked, quietly discarded without explanation. You see those texts go through that you sent, but the responses start to come days later in short phrases, or they're limited to thumbs up emoji, or LOL, or not at all. And as an aside, that LOL, I really feel like that should be moved over from indicating that positive emotional response to a very sarcastic definition that really means I'm actually not even laughing at all. Or what I'm doing right now actually is rolling my eyes. Or making a scoffing sound. That exchange of emotional vulnerability and closeness are restricted in their ration to weekly service-level comments about food or weather. Those telephone conversations become completely non-existent. And then other forms of communication, they slow down to a trickle and then down to silence. That it's not you, it's nothing personal, become that standard response. And you know they're lying because you knew them before they turned away. Or at least you thought you did. And those memories and the texts and the words from the past that pop up, they result in tears and storms of grief. God, what happened? What did I do? Or that quiet sigh of just complete resignation and despair. And that silence on their end is deafening. And you wonder over and over, what on earth did I do to cause them to turn away? And that's when things start to shift. It turns inward. Those self-questions and that overthinking start, and you hold them up to the light like a jeweler examining stones for imperfections. And then you experience that puzzled shame because rejected, it feels like somebody slapped this awkward label on you. It was unwarranted, and suddenly you've been defined by circumstances outside of your control. Did I make them angry? Was I too much? What did I do to cause them to feel that way? Maybe they started to feel unsafe around me for some reason. Are they talking about me to others now and making me look bad? Did I do something that maybe they interpreted completely other than I intended it? And why won't they address it and let me know what I did so we can reconcile? And though in reality it likely wasn't you and that rejection was unwarranted, you don't talk about it to anybody else because it all just makes you feel so stupid about being fooled again into opening up and letting your heart get crushed. And so you suffer in deep silence with a lump in your throat so big that it aches to speak. And your eyes and body hurt from all the tears. And even though you try to hide those bruises from the shots that your heart has taken, that toll of the emotional upheaval shines like a high beam from your eyes. And that loss warps the good memories, and it turns them into a distant fog, a reel that plays out through a filter of anger and says, why did this happen? I just want him back. I'm not good enough. Something's wrong with me. Or they wouldn't have left. It's me. They think I'm stupid enough to not notice that they've been distant for a long time. They think I'm crazy. They don't care, and they probably haven't cared for a long time. And we tell ourselves, it must have been me. I'm obviously the one at fault here. And if they do reach out, it's like that drop of cool water falling on your tongue in the middle of a desert, but it doesn't satisfy. It's not enough, and it happens so infrequently that you start to realize they're just being cordial and leaving just enough connection to keep you at bay, like an acquaintance, and you just want to be close again and share your heart and laugh and know you're safe again and accepted, not left out in the cold barefoot, especially here in Illinois. Y'all grew up in Michigan, and stepping out into that wind without a coat, you know, that shock to the system that hits, that's what it's like when your heart is bare and bleeding. Because it's an incomparable shock to the system. It's devastating. I didn't do enough. I did too much. I am too much. I failed. And since I'm a failure, I'm not really worthy of love. And since I'm not worthy of love, nobody's going to love me, and I'm going to be alone. And we go down that spiral. We all do it. 0 to 150, just like that, because we get into this thought pattern that just loops and loops and loops. We start to believe that, and we generalize it to other areas of our life, and it trickles down. No one wants me. It's amazing. They've done some studies. Those same areas of the brain that are active when we're rejected, when we feel that abandonment, they're the same areas of your brain that activate when we feel actual physical pain. That's why we literally have that, ugh, that gut punch, that pain, whenever we experience rejection and those related emotions. fMRI studies have literally shown that those areas of the brain light up in the same exact areas. Because we were created by God to live in community with each other. We're not created to live alone. A lot of times we look outside of ourselves to find our sense of worth, our sense of feeling worthy to be loved and worthy of others' time and consideration and sense of self-esteem. We do. And so when somebody turns away or says no, or no thanks, or rejects us in some way, we feel that loss of self-esteem because somebody's turned their back, and we feel worthless because we're trying to gain a sense of worth from the wrong source. We're looking in the wrong direction. Believe it or not, ladies who were there yesterday, I actually am an introvert. I used to be more outgoing, but as I've gotten older, I've become more quiet. Thank God. Big crowds are pretty overstimulating, and I'm just fine in a quiet room by myself talking one-on-one with people, which is good because I'm a therapist and I get to talk to one or two or maybe three people at a time for an hour in session. We just discuss things. That is fine with me. But within each of us lives that deep, incredible need for acknowledgement and acceptance and knowledge that we belong. Even though I'm an introvert and I do need that time to go away and recharge myself and sit on the couch and look at Steak and Shake and put away my phone, just do something that recharges me and fills my bucket, I still have that deep, deep need to belong. I'm sharing this today not from a place of mental health training and academia. Yeah, that's there, but I'm sharing this because I've been there too. And God allowed that to happen so I could share it with you today. I need a place. I need to know that somebody in this vast universe gets me. I read something so powerful, and it's kind of funny. When you find people who not only tolerate your quirks, but celebrate them with glad cries of, me too! Be sure to cherish them, because those weirdos are your tribe. It's so helpful. It's so healing to have that tribe of weirdos. And I've got my tribe, thank God. And no, they're not actually weirdos. They're my people. And they see me with all of my faults. There's one right there sitting on the end of that pew. Pastor Danny, thank you for being one of my weirdos. They see all my faults and strange ways of looking at the world, and they still accept me. They don't just accept my flaws, but they celebrate my wins without jealousy. That's a big one. That's a real big one. And envy. And instead of judgment, they provide that sense of belonging and acceptance. And come closer. There's a place for you. Come sit at the table. Come on. And that comes with such a deep experience of healing. It's like being out alone in a storm where the boat's rocking and the waves have crashed and you're shivering and the rain is freezing and cold and everything that is shaken, that can be shaken, is shaken. And then suddenly it's peace, be still. And the sun comes out and it drives away the cold rain and wind, and you're surrounded with that blanket of warmth and quiet and seagulls. It's a feeling that clears your perspective. And instead of seeing through that warped, cracked lens that tells you everyone's out to get you and you'll never be loved, you're certainly not wanted, it helps you to start seeing the world again with a clear reality. You know, I wear glasses. I'm getting older now. And I tell you what, there's some days when I wake up and it's like I just sat up and rubbed bacon grease on the lenses because they're so smeary and I can't see anything, and people are just, they're blurry. But when you clean those glasses, when the perspective gets changed, you can actually see reality, and community creates that. Here's the thing about hurt and pain and loneliness and feeling unwanted. All those sorts of emotions and experiences, they're magnets. They're magnets. And whenever you've been in that place, when you've experienced it, you can see it in others. You know, the words, the expressions, that body language, as it shifts from confidence to defeat without a word. And I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand here today, but I do know, unless you're delusional or you've been living underground, that you've experienced rejection in some form. Today, if you're able, I'm going to ask you either to just close your eyes for a minute or just have a look down. I'm not asking you to stand up right now. But I just want you to hear about someone who adores you. This is a reminder today. Someone who literally lives every day with your name floating around his mind, and the thought of you brings incredible joy and a deep, deep tenderness that would love to reach out and hold you close. Someone who thinks of you constantly and brings a smile to his face. Someone who plans infinitely detailed plans for your success. And he draws out the architecture of your life right down to the tiniest little pinpoint items. He knows when you're lying. He knows your preferences. He even knows your food preferences and that you don't like mushrooms or liver. And he understands why. He knows the date of your beginning, and he also knows your termination date too. And that in between those two places, he has put together an outline specifically for you. He sees the day that you were hurt the first time. And when the world turned from bright and full of joy to dark and scary. And he understands why you felt so defeated and why years later something triggers that memory and you feel like a little child again, unable to stand up for yourself because you're so horribly embarrassed and just want to hide. He feels that embarrassment. Isaiah says it so beautifully in chapter 53, verses 3 through 5. He is despised and rejected of men. A man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not, meaning we didn't even appreciate it or value his worth. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him. And with his stripes, we are healed. He, Jesus Christ himself, was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He was so familiar with rejection. He didn't just walk up and die on the cross. He experienced that physical pain. He experienced that horrific journey that humanity can be sometimes. Jesus Christ was the epitome of suffering, and he knew what it meant. You know, we generalize those feelings, and you know, when we feel sorry for ourselves and say, it just feels like nobody loves me, and it does sometimes. But Jesus knew what it actually meant to have the entire world turn its back on him. He knows rejection intimately. Listen again. We've heard it before, but listen to those last words before he died on the cross. When he felt that immense weight and grief and physical pain, about the ninth hour in Matthew 27:46, Jesus cried out with a loud voice. He felt this, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That is to say, my God, why have you forsaken me? He felt that so clearly. He knows what causes the cracks in your foundation and your own self-depreciation and value. That catalyst, whatever it was, that just shifted everything and caused your confidence to falter. And now you find yourself standing around paralyzed and hypervigilant and wondering, do I even speak up? Do I even say anything? Should I even raise my hand? Do I take the risk? Why should I even try again? Because last time it was a tsunami that hit you and it crashed and obliterated everything that you tried to build up. He knows and he sees that. And he sees those the tattered shreds that you tried to pull back around yourself, like just some little semblance of dignity, but it's not quite enough to cover up. It's like those dreams. We've all had them where you're in a crowd or on a stage and suddenly realize you're not fully clothed or not even clothed at all, and you're feeling suddenly very vulnerable. And he sees that. He knows how we see ourselves. But he sees you through his eyes. Through his eyes. The eyes that adore his child and want only the best for you. And today, the most gentle hands in the universe, they long to reach out and hold you and plug up the holes and mend and sew back together those fragments that are just barely held. He wants to reinforce those places and make you stronger than you've ever been before because he loves you. He saw you before he ever existed, and he loved you then. He loves you so much that he's allowing you to face some hardship, to face some pain and walk through that and experience the crushing and learn to trust him more and grow closer to him in the process. Psalms 91:4, listen closely, says, he shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Jesus Christ is the ultimate refuge where you can run. I know that these are basic things that we have heard over and over and over again, but he wants to remind you of that today because sometimes we can get so focused in on our problems and our issues, and those simple truths are so profound. He wants to cover and hide you. He wants to wrap you up and hide you. He's not just one of those gigantic shields planted in the ground that protects us from that all-out attack of the enemy and the arrows. He's also a buckler. The Bible points this out. In ancient times, a buckler was a smaller shield that was strapped onto the forearm. And it was used to protect soldiers in hand-to-hand combat, that close contact in battle. It was held at arm's length or close to the body to defend against that gut punch or the thrust of the sword. And he protects us even in those small details. And he's never going to leave us or forsake us. We can make him our resting place. He is that place for us, and we forget it, and we go every day, and we do our things, and we're so busy trying to take care of others and help and do the work of the kingdom, and he's just there. I'm here. I'm here and I want to be with you. How many parents are in this room today? I want you to take a minute and think about your kids. Especially when they're younger, you know, some days you may want to consider just getting an upgrade. And because this current model is, oh God, they're just too much. We all have those days. These children are going to drive me crazy. And they say the most horrific things in public. And I have two teenage boys right now, and they make the most amazing sounds with their bodies, especially in public. And you're just mortified. And then they turn around and walk in and say, love you, Mom, and plop down on your lap and almost squash you. Those gigantic teenage bodies. And both of my boys have this giant curly hair that just goes up my nose. You do anything that you could to protect them. And there's this fierce instinct that overrides anything, any feelings of anger or frustration when it comes to taking care of your children. You're going to protect and love and do whatever you can because these are the children God placed in your care, these little humans that he's entrusted to you. Think of how much you love them. Even when they are the most horrid stinkers that you could ever imagine, how much you love them, how deep that love goes. It's a part of who you are. And now I want you to multiply that by 100 billion. Multiply that by the sands and the ocean. And that is only the beginning of measuring just how much God loves you. It is beyond human comprehension, and yet he sees that in you, his boy, his girl. I can tell you personally what it feels like to have a heart shattered by that pain of rejection without any sort of explanation or rationale. And it does cause that a great deal of self-inventory. What did I do? Why did this happen? I am too much, or I wasn't enough, or I did this. And looking closely and really taking that inventory and also growing closer to God. Because that's the point. But I want to share with you some things that the King of the universe showed me and spoke to me directly. I want to share these with you today because we all deal with this. And in some of my hours of deepest grief, because they are. Sometimes rejection feels even worse than death, because whenever there is death, yes, there's grief, but there's also closure that finally comes at some point where our heart and our head finally start to reconcile with each other and we know it's over and they're gone. But with rejection, they're still alive and you have to come in contact with them sometimes, whether it's a divorce or it's the loss of a friendship or some sort of romantic relationship or whatever that is, and you see them and that gut punch happens again. God showed me a vision of how he saw me in that time of grief. And I will tell you, it was ugly and visceral and awful. And not necessarily awful because he thought I was a terrible person who needed punishment. It was awful because that injury was so deep and terrible to see. He showed me a vision of my upper body. And my clothes were so blood-soaked that the original color of my shirt was indiscernible because I'd been stabbed so many times. And that blood ran down my head, my hairline, and it covered my face to the point that the skin underneath was almost completely obscured. My eyes were glued shut so tightly from all the blood that I could see nothing, and all I could feel was pain, and I literally was just drained of strength and purpose and focus. I was immobilized and sat with my face tilted up just a little bit. Just, you ever felt that? It just hits, and you can't do anything, and you're stuck. And he told me, and yes, while he was gentle, he was straight up with me. That's how he talks to me, and he didn't pull any punches. And he said, Randa, until I become everything that you need, that pain of losing other relationships, it's going to continue to be overwhelming and intense. Let me be all you need. Stop seeking in others only what you can find and me. Stop focusing on what you're getting from those other relationships and focus on the best that I have to offer. You've placed too much love and affection on the wrong things and people. And oh, this hit hard. He said, why are you giving away hours and months and years to the work of the kingdom and helping others when you won't even give me an hour of your day? I spend sessions in quantifiable hours, specific hours. This hit home so hard. And he said, of course, when you do it to the least of these, when you're helping those other people, you are doing it unto me. But I need personal time with you. I need that one-on-one time directly with you when we are talking. And when I get to be your everything, right now you've just made me an afterthought. You keep turning your back on me just like the others have done to you. Yeah, watch out. It hit so hard. He said, stop focusing on that loss of human presence and rest in my presence. Let me show you what it means to be loved with a love that will never stop or fade or turn away. You need to rest in me and find your strength in my presence, or you will not survive. He said, I'm not just here to forgive you or heal your physical wounds. I took the stripes on my back to heal your heart, too. And my blood covers your emotional wounds, too. And I'm gonna heal those. Oh, what a comfort. What a comfort. Can anybody relate to that? Can we just take a minute and thank God? Because he loves us so much. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. God sees us through his eyes with his mirror of love and with that magnifying glass that doesn't just see the flaws, but he sees every detail that he created right down to the cellular level. And even though it is hurt and it's wounded, he still sees this is good. I created this and I can use this and I want to be around them. I want to be close to them. He sees the end from the beginning, and he knows what lies beyond that bend on those paths. And yet we fight against and we resist, because when something is good and right, when he wants us to change, when he wants us to shift, it still doesn't feel good at all sometimes. And sometimes things get ripped out by the roots and we feel like we're never going to be whole again. He sees those things around the corner that we can't see, and he wants to redirect us. Let's go this way instead. Come on. There's so much more for you in this new direction, and my ways are higher than your ways, and this temporary loss is for your gain in the long run. I know you can't see it right now, but I need you to trust me, because my plans for you are so much better. You have no frame of reference right now about what I'm doing. Nothing at all. And it seems dark, and it seems so confusing, and why is this happening? But you will. You will. You'll get there. There's a better way, honey. Be still and trust me. Yes, the tears are going to flow and those feelings of loss are going to crash against you like waves, but lean into me. We're going to head a different direction. It might hurt a lot, but I'm right here with you. Come on. Let's do this. Let's do this. He sees you. He sees you. The Bible says he knows the way that I take. He knows it. He's been there. He's been beyond where I've already gone. And when he has tried me, when he has refined me and stripped off all the stuff that I didn't even realize was there, I will come forth as pure gold. Pure gold. Jesus. Can we stand? The musicians, if y'all can come. That last song that y'all did, You're Working All Things, if y'all can sing that. He sees the potential in us. He sees the great work that he created you to be. He sees where you've been and the crushing and the hurt and the pain that you might even be experiencing right now. But the Bible also says a bruised reed may be damaged, but it's not irreparable. The smoking flax might be about to lose its fire altogether, but it can still be reignited. There's still hope. You're not destined to die alone. He's here and he sees you. Zephaniah 3:17 says, "The Lord your God in your midst, the mighty one will save." Let this sink in and comfort your heart today. He will rejoice over you with gladness, and he will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing. He'll quiet you with his love. Think about that. It's that calming peace. Be still. It comes after that raging storm of grief and the fear of the future. There's something that instantly stills the heart of a child when they can climb up on the knee of their parent and hide their face in the crook of their arm and just be held while a mom or a dad strokes their hair and rocks them. Shh, it's okay. It's okay. And they sing a little song. And the heart, that distress level goes from here and it just comes down. And there's rest and peace. And today there's a lot of us here who still feel like a child inside, in need of comfort, who need to be held. And hear a song. It's gonna be okay. I'm here. It's okay, honey. Just be still. You're not alone. I want to invite everyone to come. I'm not gonna single out or ask people to you know, come and stand and say, "I'm the one who's dealing with unspeakable grief." If we can all just come to the front if you're willing. Jesus is here today to hold you. And I invite you to allow him to pour his healing oil into every place that needs it. Every raw place that is sensitive and still reacts to touch or words. Every place of emptiness that we feel will never again be filled. He wants to fill it today. He's just waiting for you to come. His eyes are on you. You are the focus of his devotion. And I invite you to come and rest. Find your rest in him, because there is a better way. There's a better way.